This morning I was reading the verse from The Passing Away of Grandfather Bhishma. And I'm going to share that verse with you. This is text 26, from chapter 9, canto 1, and there's three sections in this chapter 9. One is Bhishma Dev's pacifying Yudhisthira. The next section is Bhishma Dev just exploding in glorification of the personality of Godhead Krishna. And then Bhishma Dev asks Yudhisthira asks Bhishma Dev, "Now that you've convinced me to perform my duty, what's my duty? Could you describe the duties of a king?" He gives this varnashram, detailed description of how a king should perform his duty. Because the duty of a king is to see that everyone is engaged in their occupational duty. So it describes the varnas and ashrams, the divisions of work and social situation. And the final section is Grandfather Bhishma passes from this world. That's a very wonderful chapter, filled with lots of emotion and lots of valuable instruction. So 26 and Maharaj Yudhisthira's inquiry, Bhishma Dev, so the inquiry in 25 is, Maharaj Yudhisthira, after hearing Bhishma Dev speak in that appealing tone, asked him in the presence of all the great rishis about the essential principles of various religious duties. Prabhupada's comment was, actually this shouldn't have been asked. Here's a man who's about to die, and you're asking him, Can you teach me the ABCs? Normally, everyone should be assisting that person who's about to die to be fixed in one thing, just exclusive devotion upon the personality of Godhead. Not, can you do this service for me? But it was to direct glory to Bhishma Dev, who even in such extremely difficult situation was able to deliver perfect knowledge. So the first of Bhishma Dev's instructions is, at Maharaj Yudhisthira's inquiry, Bhishma Dev first defined all the classifications of castes and orders, of varna and ashram, in terms of an individual's qualifications. Then he systematically, in twofold divisions, described counteraction by detachment and interaction by attachment. That's in the last paragraph of the purport, but I want to focus on the first part of the purport. There's general instructions for everybody, civilized everybody. The conception of four castes and four orders of life as planned by the Lord Himself Bhagavad Gita 4:13. Bhagavad Gita 4:13 is Chatur Varnamaya Shrishtam Guna Karma Vibhagya. Krishna's Srishti. Krishna's created that system. Personally did it. So someone might say, oh, I don't believe in it. And someone might say, oh, I believe in it. And belief is one thing. Disbelief is in the same category as belief. It's Krishna created it. It's everywhere. What's the purpose behind that system? To accelerate transcendental qualities of the individual person so that he may gradually realize his spiritual identity and thus accordingly to get free from material bondage or conditional life. So lots of things we can say what the Varnashram system is not, or the corrupted caste system is not and should not be. But what is it? There's another thing to understand. So it's to accelerate transcendental qualities of the individual person. How do we accelerate transcendental qualities of the individual person? That's a nice thing to be able to do. By becoming more attached to the Supreme, who has transcendental qualities. That's meant to bring one swiftly to that position. In almost all the Puranas, the subject matter is described in the same spirit. And so also in Mahabharata, it is more elaborately described by Bhishma Deva in the Shanti Parva, beginning from the 60th chapter, paragraph. The Varnashram Dharma is prescribed for the civilized human being just to train him to successfully terminate human life. So there's the real terminator. Self-realization is distinguished from the life of the lower animals engaged in eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. Bhishma Deva advised all human beings 9 qualifications. So this is universal. It fits everybody. One size fits all. Do not become angry. 2. Do not lie. Like 10 commandments or something. 3. Equally distribute wealth. 4. To forgive. 5. To beget children only by one's legitimate wife. 6. To be pure in mind and hygienic in body. 7. To not be inimical toward anyone. 8. To be simple. And 9. To support servants or subordinates. One cannot be called a civilized person without acquiring the above mentioned preliminary qualities. That's like, it doesn't matter whether you're a Sudra or a Brahmin or a Kshatriya or a Vaishya. These are everyone principles. You go back and look at them. Besides these, the Brahmanas, the administrative men, the mercantile community, and the labor class must acquire special qualities in terms of occupational duties for all mentioned in all Vedic scriptures. For the intelligent men, the Brahmanas, the intellectuals, what's the most outstanding point according to Bhishma Deva's instructions? Controlling the senses. Most essential qualification. It is the basis of morality. sex indulgence even within with a legitimate wife must also be controlled, and thereby family control will automatically follow. And intelligent man abuses his great qualifications if he does not follow the Vedic way of life. This means he must seriously make a study of the Vedic literatures, especially of the Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. For learning Vedic knowledge, one must approach a person who is 100% engaged in devotional service. He must not do things which are forbidden in the Shastras. A person cannot be a teacher if he drinks or smokes. In the modern system of education, the teacher's academic qualification is taken into consideration without evaluation of his moral life. Therefore, the result of education is misuse of high intelligence in so many ways. The Kshatriya, new paragraph. The member of the administrative class is especially advised. What's he especially advised to do? Give charity. And then in italics. And not accept charity. Doesn't say parentheses bribes, but that's what it is. In any circumstance. In any circumstance. Not accept charity, but always give charity. One way. Give charity. Modern administrators raise subscriptions for some political functions, but never give charity to the citizens in any state function. It is just the reverse in the injunctions of the Shastras. Next, the administrative class must be well versed in the Shastras, but must not take to the profession of teachers. Administrators, next, should never pretend to become nonviolent and thereby go to hell. When Arjuna wanted to become nonviolent, coward, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he was severely chastised by Lord Krishna. The Lord degraded Arjuna at that time to the status of an uncivilized man. For his avowed acceptance of the cult of nonviolence, the administrative class must be personally trained in military education. Cowards should not be elevated to the presidential throne by dint of numerical votes only. The monarchs were all chivalrous personalities, and therefore monarchy should be maintained provided the monarch is regularly trained in the occupational duties of a king. In italics, in fighting, the king or the president should never return home without being hurt by the enemy. The so-called king of today never visits the war field. He is very much expert in artificially encouraging the fighting strength in the hope of false national prestige. As soon as the administrative class is turned into a gang of mercantile and laborer men, the whole machinery of government becomes polluted. Paragraph. Vaishyas. The members of the mercantile communities are specially advised to protect cows. Cow protection means increasing milk productions, namely curd and butter. Agriculture and distribution of the foodstuffs are the primary duties of the mercantile community, backed by education and Vedic knowledge, and trained to give charity. As the Kshatriyas were given charge of the protection of the citizens, Vaishyas were given charge of the protection of animals. Animals are never meant to be killed. Killing of animals is a symptom of barbarian society. For a human being, agricultural produce, milk, and fruits are sufficient and compatible foodstuffs. Human society should give more attention to animal protection. The productive energy of the laborer is misused when he is occupied by industrial enterprises. Industry of various types cannot produce the essential needs of man, namely rice, wheat, grains, milk, fruits, and vegetables. The production of machines and machine tools increases the artificial living fashion of a class of vested interests and keeps thousands of men in starvation and unrest. This should not be the standard of civilization. He goes on. But the duties of the vaishyas. So that's the varnas. Then he speaks of ashrams. Last paragraph. Ashram dharma is gradual progress in the path of self-realization. Both varna and ashram dharma are interrelated. What is dependent on the other. The main purpose of ashram dharma is to awaken knowledge and detachment. The brahmachari ashram is the training ground for the prospective candidates. In this ashram, it is instructed that this material world is not actually the home of the living being. The conditioned souls, under material bondage, are prisoners of matter, and therefore self-realization is the ultimate aim of life. The whole system of ashram dharma is a means to detachment. One who fails to assimilate this spirit of detachment is allowed to enter family life with the same spirit of detachment. Therefore, one who attains detachment may at once adopt the fourth order, namely renounced, and thus live on charity only, not to accumulate wealth, but just to keep body and soul together for ultimate realization. Household life is for one who is attached, and the vanaprastha and sannyas orders are for those who are detached from material life. The brahmachari ashram is especially meant for training both the attached and the detached. That's a simple gloss. We'll go back to these nine items, the nine commandments of Bhishma Dev. They're also related. It doesn't say control anger. It says the first one is do not become angry. So we know from Bhagavad Gita what causes anger. What causes anger?
Unsatiated enjoyment.
Yeah. The soul associating with the mode of passion. Rajoguna. Samudbhava. Kamesha Krodesha. Rajoguna Samudbhava. What's that association with the mode of nature? What's the mode of goodness? Excuse me, the mode of passion. What's the mode of passion? The spirit of enjoying independently of Krishna. Of course, we add independently of Krishna, but for most people it's just enjoying. I was in somebody's home over the weekend brushing my teeth, and the kids had a little thing by the sink. In fun we trust. In fun we trust. That means God is being promoted as fun. So some say God is love or God is peace. God is fun. In fun we trust. one man, some, I'm trying to remember where it was arguing that, he was arguing against something that I didn't say. His argument was, why do you speak about, you know, giving up family life? I didn't speak about giving up family life. Why do you speak about, because those things in life are fun, and we should have fun. But what's wrong? Why are you, you know, if what's fun? If God is fun, then, you know, serving God is fine. And that's fun. But if fun is defined in terms of the mode of passion, which is enjoy independently of Krishna, kamesha, prodesha, rajoguna, sambhutava. Because the mode of passion says enjoy specifically independent of Krishna. Specifically. So the art of spiritual life is to take the things that we do and put them again in contact with reality, with a capital R, or the absolute truth with a capital A and T, in connection with Krishna. In service to Krishna, then that's fun. Or Anandamayo Vyasa, I was thinking to speak on, instead of speaking this verse, I was thinking the activity of someone who's attached to Krishna is what? When someone's in contact with Krishna instead of the mode of passion, what's the symptom? Katayantashyamam nityam tushyanti charamanticha. They do things like we were just doing, having nice kirtan. Come from different places, some from here, some from there, and some from there, and some from there, and come together to sing the holy name of God and hear His loving words and those of His pure devotees and share that with one another. And then the unit of family and the happiness of having social interaction becomes satisfied on a spiritual platform. And when that God-conscious component is not really central, it's the mode of passion. We want fun. Family life, social life, occupation, whatever it is, becomes seeking material happiness, and that seeking material happiness, according to Bhagavad Gita, is definitely, not maybe, it's definitely going to result in frustration and anger. So Bhishma Dev's instruction is, don't become angry. How do you fulfill that one? Answer. Find happiness by being in contact with the personality of God. This is from chapter 5 of this first canto. Narada is scolding Vyas. That's really intense. He's the person, he's an incarnation of the Lord. He's getting scolded by Narada. And the scolding is, you haven't sufficiently glorified the personality of Godhead. You told people by Vedic formulas how they can become pious enjoyers. And that's nice, but the personality of Godhead is not sufficiently emphasized, and therefore their spirit of enjoyment will become pronounced. Mode of passion will be inordinately attractive to them. So the full effect is supposed to happen of attachment to Vishnu isn't going to take place. Basically says, shame on you. He says, condemned. That's heavy words from your spiritual master. Condemned. So, more gently, don't become angry. How to fulfill that instruction? Become attached to the Supreme. Katayantaschamam nityam tushyanti charamanti cha. That's number one. Number four is to forgive. I just received this little note. The circumstances can be different, but there was a teenager that said one of their kids in school, one of their friends in school, is an Indian girl, South Indian girl, one of her friends in school is Muslim, and she's developed a nice friendship with this Muslim girl, and she came to find out that the Muslim girl, her red button, is people from India. Well, you know, I'm from India. At least my parents are from India. And why you feel, you know, angry towards people from India? My grandparents, they were trying to leave India during partition, and they were trying to leave for Pakistan during partition. Indian people beat them and beat them. Practically, they almost died before they made it back to Pakistan. So I don't like Indian people. So the girl was asking, how do I deal with my friend? I wanted to slap her face. I was getting angry. As she was angry. I said, what if it was my grandparents that were those people that were hurting your grandparents? How would you feel towards me? Or towards them? I feel angry. So there's basic religious instruction that says don't be angry, but if some anger arises because there's some contact with the mode of passion, then you practice forgiveness. That comes in the next verse. At this, you know, Shanti Parva is filled with these are antidotes, you know, like here's the problem, here's some medicine. If there's some anger, well, you shouldn't be angry. We know when we get angry, that's what she was saying. I know it's not right for to feel this way, but I feel this way. I want to scratch your eyes out. But I know I shouldn't feel that way, but I feel that way. So practice forgiveness. And for your anger, what would you like? You would like people to forgive you, right? For that anger, because you don't really want to feel angry, but you're feeling angry. So curb the anger by forgiveness, hoping that others will also forgive you. So move to the quality of goodness, because forgiveness is a quality of goodness. Even if others are not in that quality of goodness, doesn't mean, okay, I should not be in the quality of goodness because others are not in the quality of goodness. Does that make sense? And some people say, oh, if you're in the quality of goodness, people will take advantage of you. People will exploit you. You're too soft. You got to be hard. Let people take advantage of you. Krishna will protect you, ultimately. So, be good anyways. Be forgiving anyways. This is just speaking on worldly values. What we're going to get to. I'll go through a couple more of these values that all persons who are civilized should embrace. And then how do you sustain that if it's like it's just not happening, or not happening as well as you'd like it to happen? Don't lie. That's universal. Satyam, truthfulness. In according to the Bhagavatam, the last leg of religiosity that's standing in the age of Kali is truthfulness, and that one's wobbling. That one's wobbling. Because the personality of Kali is bashing on it. I had this, spent 12 hours with teenagers during the Christmas holiday in Chicago on the topic of self-honesty. And one of them said, you know, I asked towards the beginning, what are you hoping to get out of this? And one of the responses was, it's just like impulsive. Like somebody asks me, how many rounds have you chanted? And I say, 16. Or, he said, 4, but I've only chanted once. I could just say one. You know, I'm going to plan to chant some more, but so far I've chanted one. Why do we do that? And so many other little things of life that we don't represent the truth. We represent a distortion of the truth, and we do it all the time. Why do we do that? The absence of the quality of goodness. Because where there's the quality of goodness, you just stand by truth. And then you can be not only truthful to others, but even more fundamentally, you can be truthful to yourself about things that are needing some attention. But if you're not truthful to yourself, even something's brought to your attention by a sledgehammer, you don't recognize it. Because it's just deception is the rule, and truth is scarce. So it's a principle to live by. Equally distribute wealth. So it doesn't just say be charitable. Of course be charitable. But equal distribution of wealth. What does that mean? There's the material tendency of I and mine. And there are those that are in the category of mine, and I'm especially charitable to mine. And those that are not in the category of mine, well, we'll see. Good luck. We're not God. We're not capable of taking care of the necessities of all beings. That's not the message. But to have equal disposition, like pandita samadarshana, vidya avanaya sampane, brahmani gavi hastani, shuni chaiva sapaki cha, pandita samadarshana, to have a disposition equal to all living beings. That's not possible without spiritual vision, seeing according to the soul, not according to the covering of the soul or the designation, the upadhi. And we can go further down the list, but what's the support for real values in society? Like in the first chapter of the first canto, the sages of Naimisharanya asked that question. When Krishna was present, Krishna's gone. Krishna's recently departed this world. But when Krishna was present, just by the touch, the imprint of the lotus feet upon this earth, all auspiciousness was abundant. And all principles of religion were being automatically, just by his presence, they were observed. and those that were determined to go against religious principles, Krishna removed them. So all that was left was people abiding by religious principles. Now Krishna's gone. Now that Krishna's gone, where are religious principles taking shelter? Somebody may want to do the right thing, and it's hard to do the right thing in an atmosphere that's very powerfully, strongly going in the opposite direction. I know somebody that went into civil service in India. You know, they had the ideal all through their study that I'm not going to be like that, the civil servant that just subsists on bribes. Because everybody knows. And that's not why he was going into civil service. He was going into civil service because he believes in doing something different. But it was the current was very strong. Not like his desires changed, but you know, the culture of bribery is so strong, people expect you to do it, and if you don't do it, you're shunned. Your family's at risk. It's dangerous. A lot of pressure to take bribes and live like that. Be dishonest. You're an impediment. You know, it's like a courteous driver in New York City is easy to cause accidents because people expect, you know, pause and wait for somebody to, you know, they expect them to be aggressive. It's true. You know, cautious driver, courtesy driver in urban situations can be causes of accidents. Anyway, it's hard. So how do you sustain these wonderful, who can argue against them, principles? Civilized person won't argue against them. Civilized person may have a hard time sustaining them. So the sustaining part goes back to this theme of the Bhagavatam that Narada is speaking to Vyas. The glorification of the personality of Godhead must be a very core, focused, central part of your teaching, and how that translates into our life is it must be a very core, central part of our life, like chanting the holy name every day, not in Krishna Janmashtami. And then the rest of the year is something else. But every day, every day, every day, every day. Katayantaschamam nityam. Nityam. If not always, nityam literally means always, but at least regularly. Regularly means every day. Like, you know, you take a bath every day. Not on Janmashtami, I'll take a bath. Or something. Every day. Every day. Every day I eat, and every day I... Those things that are... So to be a civilized person, every day the chanting of the holy name should be there. Somebody was asking one program, isn't there some other... You know, does it have to be chanting? What do you mean? Is it too hard? Or is it too easy? You want something more hard, more difficult. It was, you know, it wasn't clear what he wanted to. There's so many things out there, and why does it have to be chanting? Because all religions speak about chanting. All religions speak about glorifying God's holy name. And in this age, people are lazy. And they're misguided. And they're unfortunate. They're always disturbed, and if it's something that's difficult, people aren't going to take it up on a regular basis because something else will push that devotional activity out of the way, and you know, being in anxiety will take over that thing that they're very concerned about achieving or counteracting. in today's economic environment. So many people are very concerned about their jobs, and perhaps rightly so, because lots of people are losing their jobs, and supposing we lose our jobs, how are we going to maintain? So I'm in anxiety. When I'm in anxiety, that displaces any thought of, you know, this discretionary thing called devotion. And that's how it's looked at. You know, if I have time, I'll do it. But that's the wrong approach. To be a civilized person, these things must be there, and to maintain these things, there must be a direct activity for fixing one's consciousness upon the Supreme. And that very simple process is the chanting of the Holy Name. So we had a nice program last night. I was looking forward to wondering what that experience was going to be like. We went to the Bangladesh Hindu Mandir in Queens. And nice kirtan, devotees who were having kirtan, and then Chandrasekhar Maharaj and I both spoke, and he was impassionately pleading to the people to chant the Holy Name. Have faith that the chanting of the Holy Name really works. It's a spiritual solution to address our material circumstances of life, because it elevates the consciousness of the soul and it awakens our higher consciousness, our higher quality. Chanting the holy names of the Lord on a regular basis, combined with the nice study of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srinivata, Sukata, Krishna. Punya, Shravana, Kirtana, the activity of Shravana, Kirtana, hearing and chanting. Immediately, just in and of itself, it awakens our dormant spiritual punya. It's not the punya of feeding hungry people or digging wells in a place that doesn't have a well. It's spiritual piety, spiritual prosperity. And when that spiritual prosperity or spiritual culture is awakened, the path of the goal of life is open, and we're traversing it just by that activity. So the discussion is very fitting, that the discussion of Bhishma Dev here in the ninth chapter of the Bhagavatam, it has its place in the Mahabharata, where ethics and conduct and so forth are very elaborately discussed. But it's appropriate that it's also here in the Bhagavatam, because the emphasis in the Bhagavatam specifically is on attaining pure devotional service. And these things are assets to pure devotional service. Independent of pure devotional service, to manifest them, or to speak of sustain them, is a hard job, because there's always corners and indiscretions and influences of the age of Kali. Everything becomes contaminated in the age of Kali. Our protection and shelter is the chanting of the Holy Name and the regular hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna. Some thoughts from Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam. Any comments or questions? Anyone?
Yeah, they don't talk about the duties of the Shudra.
Yeah, you want to hear that? I didn't read that paragraph. You want to hear it? Okay. Chapter 9, text 26. Here it is. The Shudra class is less intelligent and should have no independence. They are meant for rendering service to the three higher sections of society. The Shudra class can attain all comforts of life simply by rendering service to the higher classes. It is especially enjoined that a Shudra should never bank money. As soon as the Shudras accumulate wealth, it will be misused for sinful activities in wine, women, and gambling. In italics, wine, women, and gambling indicate that the population is degraded to less than Shudra quality. The higher caste should always look after the maintenance of the Shudras, and they should provide them with old and used garments. A Shudra should not leave his master when the master is old and invalid, and the master should keep the servants satisfied in all respects. The Shudras must first of all be satisfied by sumptuous food and clothing before any sacrifice is performed. In this age, so many functions are held by spending millions. In italics, but the poor laborer is not sumptuously fed or given charity clothing, etc. The laborers are thus dissatisfied, and so they make agitation. And one of the nine commandments by Bhishma Dev is to support, number nine, to support servants and subordinates. So, just wanted to hear that, or if you have some comment on it.
In general, looking back in India, some people say, well, how can Shudra, then? Anybody can do a chant and reach Krishna, right?
Yeah.
So, if somebody is in Shudra class and then chants,
yeah,
then it doesn't matter, he can continue doing whatever he or she can continue doing whatever they do,
yeah,
were doing, and you know, move towards the shore.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else?
This principle of not being angry, how is that to be harmonized with using anger at the right place for the service of the Supreme?
Narottam Das Thakur and Bhaktivinod Thakur describe this. That's transcendental, so the not is mundane, and the transcendental is in maintaining the honor of the personality of Godhead or his pure devotee. But the example Narottam Das Thakur gives is Hanuman. He, in his anger, he burned the city of Lanka to show you guys are in big trouble. Ram is going to come and finish you. I'm just a monkey, wait around. He was standing on the wall saying that. So it was to help Ram come and be victorious, so he was using his anger that way. So if a devotee is blasphemed and you hear that, then one appropriate response, it's not like that's the only thing that you can do that's appropriate. The one appropriate response is with some indignation or some, you can't speak like that, you know, firmly contradicting, saying something against that offense or that wrong behavior or conduct. What's being spoken of here, what not to do, becoming angry, is the other kind, the usual kind. You know, you interfered with my plan for sense enjoyment. I'm angry. like this communication that I received this morning, this young girl being angry at her friend because her friend, you know, heard these things from her parents, who heard it from their parents, who, you know, so now it's this intergenerational thing of hatred. And now she's hearing that intergenerational hatred. Now she's hating the person who's speaking that intergenerational hatred. So that kind of anger is to be given up. It just, we buy into that mode of passion, mode of ignorance energy by reacting with anger. But for service to Krishna directly, then it's appropriate. I have someone back here. Yeah.
What is your advice for anger management?
Anger management? Don't have any.
Nothing.
Don't have any anger. You can have anger management, but
no.
I've given many times a stress management mm-hmm. seminar. That's where I start. So the best way to manage stress is don't have any. And not having any, that's Vaikuntha. No anxiety. So be a Vaikuntha man or woman, and there's no anxiety. So same. Anger, the best way to manage anger is don't have any. But if there is some, if not fully attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead like most of us, then the advice of Bhishma Dev is put something on the other side of the pan scale. Forgiveness. You're holding something against the other person, forgive them. Let go of that holding something against the other person. Practice forgiveness. So it elevates the quality of goodness. So, like Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, the modes of nature are mixed and they're in constant competition. Sometimes this one, sometimes that one is predominant. Right? So, if this one becomes predominant, then try to increase this one. And that will let go of the intensity of the unwanted one. That's just a material adjustment. Because what's the foundation for forgiveness? The foundation for forgiveness is to see the distinction between matter and spirit. The behavior may be bad that you're angry towards, but the soul is not bad. So you can feel badly towards the behavior, but forgive the soul that did that bad thing. In fact, the soul that did that bad thing, scratch a little deeper and there's a lot of suffering. Not just they did something bad, but what provoked them to do something bad? A lot of suffering. That person is suffering badly to do that bad thing. So feel compassion for the but that's, now we're going closer to the spiritual plane and away from the material plane of this little eruption of some bad thing or steady eruption of a lot of bad things. There's this phrase, to err is human. You know the rest of it? To forgive is divine. To err is human. So someone does a unintentional mistake, it's easy to forgive, especially if they're feeling, you know, repentant. But if they're not intentional, deliberate, and they do it repeatedly, it's hard to forgive. It's deliberate. So takes some transcendental knowledge. You can not like the behavior, but you can forgive the soul. That takes transcendental knowledge. And how do you get fixed in transcendental knowledge? That was discussed here also. You frame your life in the quality of goodness as far as possible. You know, the things that Krishna says according to the modes of nature. Knowledge, recreation, work, diet, fun. You know, frame one's life in the quality of goodness. So that when this provocation comes along over here, you've got this frame of the quality of goodness that can absorb that other thing. And you have shelter of Krishna if you've cultivated the chanting of the holy name and direct devotional activity. You become less provoked by circumstance. That's anger management. So that, you know, be regular in your habits. That's a quality of goodness. So many things. Those things which are be very clean. How does that have to do with anger management? It has to do with promoting the quality of goodness in life. Be very truthful. And so on. Frame your life in the quality of goodness. So that when something that gets provoked over here, something that seems quite unreasonable, you don't fly off into anger. In short, frame your life in the quality of goodness and anchor your life in some daily activity of devotion, especially the chanting of the holy name. Every day, every day, every day, every day, every day. You'll find that that's the best anger management. Best.
Out of the four pillars of religiosity, mercy, truthfulness, austerity, and cleanliness, why is truthfulness given a specific place where, like you say, there is the last leg of religiosity, even though like we find glimpses of others also present in Kali Yuga? I mean, what is so special about this truthfulness? Because everything is wobbling in Kali Yuga.
Well, it through two things. It's the one that's to some degree remaining more than the other ones, and therefore where there's some strength, go there and get strength, lend strength from that one thing to the other things. And say the other same thing the other way around. If you're not truthful, then you can't even recognize the other things need attention. It's a starting point. At least be truthful. It's like if someone has done something wrong and they just won't admit that they did something wrong. Everybody except that one person recognizes something's wrong. They don't, I didn't do anything wrong. You can't even go to correcting the problem if that truthfulness is missing. Special attention goes there. Anything else?
When you were speaking about chanting always, and this made purpose of Srila Prabhupada filled with that instruction, so I desire to know how to really incorporate that. What does it really mean? And
what does it really mean?
Like, can we just have 24 hours chant, or this application?
Well, what it really means is 24 hours chanting. But practically speaking, we can't do that. You know, at least we need to sleep. And when we're eating, it's pretty hard to chant. But so minimally in a regular basis, and then Prabhupada described that when we're doing devotional service, that's also chanting, you know, in a more liberal sense. He was specifically describing in one lecture in Vrindavan, there was, in the background, there was the sound of construction workers who were finishing the guest house. And it was, you know, clang, clang, bang, bang, and Prabhupada remarked, paused and said, that is very nice, that is also chanting, that is also kirtan. Of course, in a very broad liberal, because it's, he explained, because it's service for Krishna. The building of the temple is for glorification of Krishna. So if our activities can be at least molded in that way, then the meaning is fulfilled. But then minimally, regularly, satatam, in that sense, regularly, so daily, not regularly once a year, but regularly once a day, or at intervals in the day. That's the meaning.
There's another follow-up question, it is very easy to speak about, even discuss about the lectures or some points or some other conversations. But to really pick up the bead bag and chant, it seems like it's a different. It takes more effort. It's the same activity of speaking, but why that? Why this that kind of more effort or there's a resistance in really picking up the bead bag and chanting instead of the speaking or even if it is on services or other devotional aspects?
Well, the world is filled with that one. It's not just you. The world is filled with people that are very, very happy to speak about all kinds of things. But when that same person is invited to speak about or give audience to topics about God, you know, they're looking at their watch, saying, I've got an appointment, I've got to go, I've got things I've got to do. It's the attachment to other things or the aversion to God. That which brings us to the material world is both. Our attraction to independent enjoyment and our aversion to he who is actually the enjoyer. Look, we're here in New Jersey, and people have come from faraway places, but how many people in New Jersey are here? Or in Prabhupada would comment like that. You know, we're here in Los Angeles, big city. And how many people out of this whole big city have come? It's the symptom of the age of Kali. We're unfortunate. We're attracted to so many other things and less attracted to Krishna. So in our lives, to some degree, more attracted to Krishna, but still that aversion or attachment to other things is there. Yes.
When will Krishna come
again? You want to wait?
No, I am saying.
Well, let's not wait. The opportunities for seeing Krishna are two, according to Sri Brahma Samhita. Scheduled incarnations and ecstatic jubilation. The next scheduled incarnation is Kalki Avatar, 427,000 years from now. That's the next scheduled incarnation. And when he comes, the conditions are really bad.
I'm wondering
if
Sri Chaitanya, he's also incarnation of Lord Krishna.
That's right.
He was born in Kali
Yuga. That's right.
So is that considered that Krishna already has come in Kali Yuga? He
did. It's not considered that. It's the fact.
Right. So, but Krishna will come again as Kalki Avatar.
Kalki Avatar. We can't wind the clock back. Just 500 years ago. We can't wind the clock back. We can't wind the clock forward either. 427,000 years. 427,000 years. That's a lot of years. A lot of lifetimes. And Kali Yuga gets really bad. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the process whereby through love for Krishna one can see him presently. Someone just forward a little quote. It was a Mataji that I don't know, Prabhupada's disciple named Bhakti Devi Dasi. So Bhakti Devi Dasi was asking Prabhupada, have you seen Krishna? And she said, yes. He said, his answer was, I'm seeing him all the time. And she said, you're seeing Krishna all the time? And Prabhupada said, yes. I've seen Krishna all the time. So, one who is eager to see Krishna, that eagerness, according to Rupa Goswami's teaching, is the price to see Krishna. But that eagerness has to be not, intermittent. So much for Krishna, so much for television. So much for Krishna, so much for economic development. So much for Krishna, so much for something. For Krishna. Whatever. When the desire is very strong, that makes the heart pure. That means one will also be doing those activities that attract Krishna. Because my wish is to attract Krishna, and then Krishna will show himself. That's the second kind, besides the scheduled incarnations.
In other words, you are saying that if we have strong eagerness in ourselves, we will be able to change
that. It's a prerequisite. What do they say? Necessary but not sufficient. It's necessary to have a strong desire. In fact, the word that's used by Rupa Goswami is greed. Now, greed is a bad quality. Lolium. But spiritual greed, like this consideration of anger. Anger is a bad quality. But in relation to the personality of Godhead, Arjuna was being induced by Krishna to become angry. Because he was ready, he was out of there. Go back on that battlefield. So, strong greed in the sense of a strong, indomitable, because a person who's greedy, they can't help themselves. It's like an addiction. An addict, they can't help themselves. They got to get their whatever it is that they're addicted to. Maybe a drug addiction, or an alcohol addiction, or a sex addiction, or a something addiction. So greed is like that. It's an addiction. So it's indomitable. Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
with that, I'll say it again, but with that comes the activities that are the symptoms of one who genuinely has such greed. They're calling Krishna's name, not just in a regulative manner, but in a very strong shelter-taking manner. And then, like this anger management, you frame your life in things that are the quality of goodness. And something that's not the quality of goodness is just gone because of that desire. So we don't have that intense longing. We have, at best, a glimmer, a distant glimmer in the darkness of light. So go towards that light. And regulate the activities of transcendence and principles of goodness in life. Yeah.
What are some of the challenges in cultivating forgiveness at heart? Thinking of who am I to forgive or what to forgive? Because if the other devotee gets upset, I'm not seeing it as a devotee, and the conception that I have may be completely wrong. So what to forgive? So most of the time I just move on with the thing, then going deeper, taking that step of actually developing that forgiveness, but just if you're saying let it go, that kind of not necessarily maybe the specific action to do maybe.
I'm not clear what you're asking. Are you clear what she's asking?
Maharaj, I think what I understand she is asking, she's not clear how to forgive and what to forgive, and sometimes she feels that I'm not someone, you know, qualified to forgive.
Who am I to forgive? No, this is not I'm this very great person that just goes around forgiving people. That's not the idea. The idea is, I'm this little person that's stuck in feeling anger towards another person or another an incident or event or something. I want to free my heart from that. I'm the one that needs this relief. Forgiveness is I let go. And to let go genuinely means you have to see the soul. And I'm this little person that doesn't see soul. I see, you know, matter. And that type of matter over there makes me angry. I don't see the soul. So rise to the platform of seeing the soul so you can actually forgive the bad behavior. You can separate the soul from the bad behavior. And you forgive the bad behavior. You let go of it. Your feelings towards it. That's what forgiveness is. Not I'm up here, they're down there. So I forgive them. Okay, let's have kirtan.